Thank you for listening to this Spectator podcast. Before you start, I'm just here to briefly tell you about our Brexit flash sale. You can get 10 issues of The Spectator for the price of one in our flash sale, plus a commemorative Brexit mug absolutely free. It has the butterfly completely out of the box, which is the cover of our issue this week. The offer ends on Monday, and you can go to spectator.co.uk/sale.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. And it is what you could call Brexit Day. I'm not sure if there is a different, more complex term we can use. But tonight the UK will be leaving the EU at 11 p.m. That was a slight cheer, but a dignified cheer, getting the tone of the moment completely correct from Fraser Nelson there. Now, to mark the occasion, the government have several things planned. The first is that they're all heading to Sunderland. In fact, they may already be there to have a cabinet outside of London. Now, James, you could say that cabinets outside of Westminster are often written up as being slightly gimmicky. They haven't under previous governments. This one, however, clearly there's a strong message the government is trying to send. Sunderland was the place during the EU referendum results nights which first suggested that Leave could really happen. And it's the first place to go, I was about to say blue, but to deliver that result. So what is the meaning behind this beyond that? And what are they going to be talking about going forward?
Well, I think Boris Johnson's big message tonight is going to be that one of the things he wants to change about the country after Brexit is, you know, where you're born will not determine your life chances. He wants to say that he's going to use this moment of Brexit to, this is a phrase we're almost using almost as much as to get Brexit done now, to level up the country, to create a situation where someone born in Sunderland, that doesn't restrict their life chances, you know, and that everywhere can do as well as London and the South East has done. And the art, you know, as he said, as Boris Johnson said to us in that interview on the campaign trail, that the UK economy, as it worked within the EU, the government, in his view, the government was writing off huge regions of a country and basically relying on London and South East to be almost a kind of single engine of the UK economy. He wants to create other engines of growth. I think the challenge of that is how to actually do it. You know, multiple governments in the post-war era have had the same aim. None of them have managed to succeed. And the question is, how do you succeed in doing that?
Fraser, the front pages today, a mix of takes on the UK's exit from the EU. But on the recurring themes and some of the words Boris Johnson released overnight, is this idea that this is a new dawn, a new page for the party. You've said before that you don't think Brexit is inherently a good or a bad thing. It's about decisions the government takes from here on in. What do you think the first thing they should be doing in terms of saying we are turning the page? What should Boris Johnson be now looking to do?
The first thing is positioning ourselves vis-a-vis the EU. In the leading article of the New Spectator, we've got a front cover with our Brexit butterfly with the simple
butterfly's
word
back.
Done on it. And that is, okay, you can argue Brexit isn't completely done, but we will be leaving the EU at 11 o'clock tonight. The chances of us going back in the EU are slim to none. So that part is done. We have left. Sure, there'll be loose ends to tie up for years to come. But in the leading article, we say that we're now celebrating our new status as the EU's greatest single ally, bar none. And that's something that I'm personally very keen of. I am a very committed Europhile. I always have been. And I remain one now. One of the reasons that I backed Brexit was to better manage our relationship with Europe. Rather than us staying in the EU trying to veto everything those guys want to do, it's far better to untie the knots. And we can be an ally from outside the EU's bureaucratic structure, but still very much a European country, still very much the most successful melting pot in Europe, and still very much in Europe's diplomatic orbit. So I think that the Prime Minister needs to do everything he can to reinforce that point, that we might be leaving the bureaucratic structure of the EU, but we are not leaving Europe. It's an impossibility for us to do so. I think he needs to do that to challenge both the relatively small Little England contingent amongst Brexiteers, and also, most importantly, to try to assuage the Remainers, because let's remember, there'll be at least half of this country who are not celebrating at all this evening. One of the reasons I actually decided not to do a kind of spectator celebration, which I was initially thinking of doing, was thinking that about a third of our readers are probably Remainers. They do not want to you know, belong to a magazine where one winning side rubs their victory in the face of the other side. I think unity is a more important priority right now than celebration. And also, as a Europhile, I see this more as a divorce, not a liberation. Now, I've never been divorced, but I imagine that when your divorce comes through, do you go out and celebrate? Probably not. You probably are glad that it's over, are glad that the wrangling's over, but you probably also mourn what could have been. And right now, that's my net emotion right now. I just almost, I'm in mourning for the European project, which I believe we could have been part of and which could have worked out for us, had it not decided to go down this intransigent federalising route over which Britain was never going to follow.
Now, let's talk about phase two of the negotiations and the trade talks. We're expecting over the next week or so to start to have the government publish its negotiating objectives for both the EU talks and the US trade talks. James, which set of talks is of the most importance to this government?
So I think the government see the two talks kind of almost going together. And I think that one of their aims, you know, is that by opening negotiations to the US at the same time, you kind of incentivize the EU to kind of come to the table. I think in the UK-EU talks, you know, you look at what the UK is saying, you look at what the EU is saying, the two sides are far apart right now. And I think we are probably in for some drama before you get into actually kind of constructive negotiations. Because, you know, if you listen to what Boris Johnson's saying and then you listen to what Michel Barnier is saying, you end up that these two positions are currently not compatible.
Yeah, but I can't believe Barnier survived the cull of commissioners that happened there at the European, or that he's back. But Barnier's style of negotiation and Varadkar's, that is past now. This antagonistic, we're the big team, you're the small team thing, they're not going to get anywhere with that. The rest of the EU, member states don't want it, Britain doesn't want it. I think, and also, it sets a dangerous tone. Right now, the obvious win for the EU is to keep Britain on board. To do that, you want to reciprocate the kind of the more friendly, open-hearted vibe that the Prime Minister has entered this with.
And just briefly, away from Brexit, James, well, we read about it actually, because we were told Sajid Javid was going to go into the meeting and tell everyone how HS2 should go ahead. But then there was the meeting between Grant Shapps, Boris Johnson and Sajid Javid about a potential decision. We haven't heard much since, and we're not expecting an official decision for a few weeks. So is there any, you know, sense of how that meeting went?
I think the sense is HS2 is going to, you know, is going to go ahead in some form. I think that Boris Johnson's, you know, love of infrastructure has won out over concerns about, you know, the cost efficiency of it and all that. So I would now be very surprised if the London to Birmingham bit of HS2 was not built.
So when it is announced, it will now be within the space of a number 10 grid.
Although, interestingly, we read today that Sajid Javid was slapped down by number 10 for briefing his involvement. Now, this is quite interesting because we haven't so far had much tension between number 10 and number 11, and yet it does seem here that the Treasury briefed out the Chancellor's support of HS2 and almost portrayed Sajid Javid as being the guy who was the deciding factor here, and he decided to give it his blessing. Therefore, it was going to happen. Now, when we all read that briefing, first of all, to the FT, then to other newspapers, you assumed that this was done with number 10's blessing. It seems that not only was it not done with number 10's blessing, but number 10 were publicly hitting back, saying this behaviour happened in the Theresa May days, it shouldn't happen now, and rather ominously, we've got a big majority, we don't have to put up with this behaviour. So a side story to the HS2 story is the relationship between number 10 and number 11. Boris Johnson's number 10 does not want to wake up in the morning and read unexpected stories from other departments and seems to be cracking down quite quickly on ministers who do engage in what it regards as freelancing.
Now, finally, very briefly, Fraser, you said you're not having a spectator party, but how are you both spending this evening as 11 p.m. passes, Fraser?
Well, I was actually at a dinner last night in the Brown's Hotel, and I came across the biggest ever Brexit party happening in the next room. I saw Rod Little on the entrance of the hotel. Oh, Fraser, are you coming to this party? And there was all sorts of other people there, and Kate Andrews, our colleague, was there.
She got snubbed.
Well, no, I actually was invited to it, but I had agreed to speak at this Dinner for Reform, the think tank. So I was talking about public services and the future of infrastructure and things. Everybody else was getting drunk and toasting Brexit. But the thing is, I would have felt a bit of a fraud being in that party, because that included people who have always supported Brexit. Take Alistair Heath at the Sunday Telegraph, for example. He was backing Brexit at a time where nobody else thought it was fashionable. Those guys have got the right to properly celebrate tonight, because it's something which they backed for a very long time. For me, I'm a sort of heartbroken Brexiteer. I don't find celebration in my heart right now. I'm very pleased that it's over. I'm very pleased that this psychodrama is finally coming to a close. But tonight, I am going to be watching Netflix.
James?
I will be watching the ITV programme on Brexit night.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser.